Hey, welcome to Dogs Are Smarter Than People, the podcast that is weird, but helpful.
Just like it's helpful.
Us in real life. I'm Carrie Jones. I'm an internationally best-selling novelist and reporter, and now a podcaster. And with me, as always, is my husband, Sean Kelly Farrar. What are you, Shawnee?
A man with three names, apparently.
And that means you're going to be a murderer soon, probably.
Oh, that's right.
But every podcast, we do a random thought, and then we give you a little life help, maybe.
Usually based on a dog's advice.
And then a dog tip, right. And it's all meant to be good happiness, man.
Just fun.
So chill back, relax, and maybe you'll learn something.
Or maybe you'll laugh.
Or maybe even both. Hey, welcome to our podcast.
What's up, beautiful?
We have random thoughts today.
Oh, we do?
Yeah.
Fantastic. I don't even know what they are. They're that random.
They're that random. So I was going to go with this negative random thought.
Oh, geez.
Which was about a debate tactic, and I've already forgotten the name of it.
Yeah.
But it's like something that like Biden supporters say Trump does on purpose during debates, but I'm not sure about any of that, honestly, whether or not he does it on purpose or whether or not that's really what's happening, etc. Because there was a presidential debate in the U.S., you know,
right.
In the last week. But there's a thing called, and it's a debate, like, technique,
mm-hmm.
and it's called the Gish Gallop,
mm-hmm.
and it's basically a rhetorical technique, according to Heather Cox Richardson, who's a very liberal and very cool historian from Maine, which the Maine part's what makes her the coolest, and she has, like, the most read Substack in the world or something.
Yeah.
Anyways, but it's a rhetorical technique in which someone throws out a fast string of lies, non sequiturs, and spacious arguments. So many, she says, that it is impossible to fact check or rebut them in the amount of time it took to say them. And so then, when you're, like, trying to deal with it, you look stupid and you look confused and you look overwhelmed because you're like, what the heck just hit me? It's
right.
Like a tsunami of bullshit.
Nice language, baby.
That's how I
like
feel.
It, though.
That's how I feel. I think you do this.
What?
I think you use that technique when we argue.
Yeah, except for the first thing is wrong. I throw out a fast string of truths. And spacious rebuttals.
No. Anyways, so that was my negative thing, right?
Yeah, do you have a positive?
Yeah.
Good.
And my positive thing is there are these adorable googly eyes on some of the Boston Tea vehicles. Apparently, that was too much for Sean. But, like, so the tea, if you're not from Boston or from New England, is, like, is a mass transit. Like, it's the Massachusetts Bay Transit. Portation.
Sorry for interrupting with my coughs, but I was trying to give you a break for getting hung up on the word transportation.
Sure you were. Authority. So, like, the T is, like, the subways and some buses, etc., etc. But, like, a while ago, I think in April, some people protested in the sense of they had a march, and they sent a letter, and they marched to the MBTA's office, and they said, we want some googly eyes on our trains.
And who put them, did the MBTA
put them
there?
Yeah, they did. And the organizers wrote, when T trains are delayed, people can at least look into the eyes of the train when it finally arrives and feel some love and understanding in their hearts. The T doesn't want to be late, they wrote. It feels bad being late. I don't know how they know that, but apparently the vehicle has a soul now because it has googly eyes.
It's like Thomas Train Engine.
And it's adorable, right?
Yes.
So, like, they were really worried that the googly eyes would fall off, which is not a good idea when you're dealing with big vehicles like
right.
that. So instead they made decals.
That's cool.
I know.
The only difference is the eyes don't move, the pupils don't move around.
Right, and the authorities' operation chief on June 14th got a whole bunch of googly eye sets, and they went to the maintenance facility, and they put some on a Green Line train, and he said to the New York Times, we handed out a few more and said, let's make these trains googly.
That's pretty funny.
Mm-hmm.
I like it. It's sweet.
It's much better than the Gish Gallop, right, man?
It's such an easy thing to do to make people happy.
I know. Can we do like that community for members? Her?
What are we going to put googly eyes on? I don't know, but there's got to be something.
Everything. We need it all here.
I just saw a picture with googly eyes on stuff, but I don't know if it was real or like Photoshopped.
If you look at the trains, they are adorable.
I thought it was more local, but I can't remember.
They are adorable.
They look cute with googly eyes, they do.
I mean, it's adorable.
At a couple dollars each, they should do all the trains.
I think we should do all of Bar Harbor.
Well, what now?
Signs.
We have to find the proper
police sauce. Cars.
Well, we can't do it now. Because you just blew your best idea of the year.
No. Just because we're saying it doesn't mean we actually are doing it. Nor are we encouraging anyone else to do this.
I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
It's not criminal mischief.
If it comes right off.
That's right.
All
right,
there you go. Yes. Freedom of speech, First Amendment rights.
It's not in any way mean or...
It's beauty.
Yeah.
It's beauty. I'm very excited about this, actually. But we're not doing it ourselves. Nor encouraging anyone to do this, even though I'm excited about it.
You're so funny. What is it? You don't even want to do the serious portion now.
No, I don't. I just want to talk about it.
All excited about the googly eyes.
It's all about googly eyes now, man. I don't care about writing. I just want to talk about googly eyes.
We're doing pinch points again?
Yes, it was a series. So last week we talked about pinch points, both on the podcast and on the blog, and honestly, nobody seems super into it. But damn it, we're committed, so we're finishing up this week. Woo-hoo! And this is going to be a bit more about the first part of Act 2 of a 3-act story, focusing on the time from the first pinch point to the midpoint.
And if you don't know of a 3-act story, Act 2 is the important middle part.
It's important. So... pausing for plea here, right? I know that plot structure isn't sexy the way character development or drama or googly eyes or obstacles or debates or conflict are, but it's super, super important and it makes a difference in your book wooing readers and in wooing agents. Okay?
In reality, it's just as important as all those things, isn't it? Because without it, you have no story.
You just have a character floating around doing nothing, making no sense, and then your story's episodic. But people aren't into it, man. They're not into structure. I don't know why.
Well, that's human, because it's just not as exciting. But
they're not INFJs, is all I have
to say. If they really want to sell a traditionally published book, they might spend a few hot seconds figuring that out.
I know, man. I know. And pinch points are really about pacing, and it's about, a lot of authors will get, this is a great story in the sense that I love the character, and I was, really interested, but, it just was repetitive, or it was, the flow wasn't right, and the pacing wasn't off. And when a lot of agents or editors reject a story, this is actually what they're talking about. They're talking about these pinch points. Right?
Yeah.
Which we talked about last week, but nobody seemed to care. Wine.
Well,
give me some
pick
cheese.
It up this week.
All right, so anyways, K.M. Wieland. Oh, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
All I was going to say is if this piques their interest, then they have to go back and listen to last week's.
Yeah, and read the blog post. So, K.M. Wieland has a really lovely graphic that we've included in our podcast notes about where to put those pinch points, right? In that second act. Right? And we're not going to really re-describe it all for this episode because we already did that, right?
Right.
So the first pinch point, which is the one we're talking about right now, comes at the 37% mark in your story. And that's the really important thing to remember. So it's in that first part of your second act, right?
Question.
Yes.
When you're talking about these percentages right here, this is only in the second act. This is not...
No, of the total story.
So this is the total story.
Of the total, the first pinch point comes at the 37% mark of your total story.
That is exactly what I was asking.
There you go.
Okay.
So Wieland, like Shawnee, is a bit of a goddess.
No, I'm not a goddess.
Yes, you are. About structure. And what she says about this first pinch point is this, that one, it comes again at that 37% of the way into the dog barking. Right?
Yes. I'll read the next one. All right. It tells us that the bad guy has some power.
Yeah.
Sometimes they got a lot of power.
Like Pokey barking.
That was Mr. Murphy.
Okay. 3.
It can be a whole big scene or just the tiniest of moments.
4.
It sets up the next 1/8 of the story in which the character will slowly begin to grow into a new awareness of his story's many truths, and specifically the truth about the nature of the conflict in which he has engaged.
Right. So, after this big important pinch point, the hero of your story, aka your protagonist, moves into the section of the book that comes before the book's halfway point or midpoint, right? That next 1/8 that she's talking about. Whelan calls this space from the 37% to the 50% mark of your total book a realization place and scenes for your character's growth, right?
Sure.
She gets what's going on a bit more during this, right? Like the hero? Protagonist? Okay. Right.
Oh, the protagonist gets what's going on a bit more.
Yeah, they like understand. I thought maybe understand.
She, I thought you meant Whelan.
I know, that's why I just fixed the podcast notes because I realized that was unclear. So the protagonist understands what's going on a little bit more here, right? Not Whelan, unless she's the star of the book. And the protagonist starts to react with that knowledge, informing her reactions and then her actions, right? So the knowledge that she gets from this pinch point, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where we're like, oh, that bad guy does have some power, right? Influences what she does until the midpoint of the story, right? Gotcha. That's clear, right?
Yes.
So Whelan writes,
in itself, the first pinch point does not reveal the true nature of the conflict of the protagonist. Rather, it foreshadows it by providing a peek at facts the protagonist has barely grasped as of yet.
Right. So, she uses the movie Alien. Do you remember that movie, Booth?
I did.
To explain this, right? It's this ancient horror movie for those of you who haven't seen it. And at the first pinch point, the crew of the spaceship realizes that the alien creature isn't what they were thinking it was. And their choices start to be informed by that until the midpoint, right?
Yes.
And then, at that midpoint, she calls it, and other people have called it this as well, the moment of truth. Ooh, right?
So the midpoint's the moment. That's when all the realization sets in.
Yeah, pretty much. So, like, at the midpoint in Aliens, that alien smashes its way out of one of the crew's chest, right?
Yeah.
So that's, like, really scary, right?
That was, like, the famous scene, I think.
Yeah. So the truth of what they're dealing with has exploded in the ship and on the screen, and it would also explode on your novel's page if it was a novel, right?
Yeah, if you were reading that, you'd get alien guts, or human guts all over you.
Lovely. So it's instructive when watching movies to observe the protagonist's facial expressions prior to the moment of truth and then afterwards, she says. Do you want to read the rest?
Sure. Before the midpoint, he'll often look baffled as he struggles to keep with the conflict. Then the light dawns in his eyes at the midpoint. And from the moment on, there's a look of knowing determination on his face, he writes.
Larry Brooks defines pinch points as, quote, an example or reminder of the nature and implications of the antagonist force that is not filtered by the hero's experience. So, like, it's the truth, right? Like, what they're up against. Mm-hmm. Like, they can't kind of deny it, really. And right. I think that's a really important thing for us all to remember when we're writing. Because it's a reminder, like we said in the other episodes, of what the stakes are, right? Like, if we forget to tell the readers what our stakes are, I mean, just, what's the whole point of reading, you know? And then you have to increase those stakes. So the first one is a foreshadowing of the stake. And then the midpoint, which is a really kind of more of a plot point than a pinch point, but there has to be a pinchiness about it, is when you're like, ah, sugar diabetes, this is bad.
It's the realization of the stake.
Yeah, man. Yeah. Pretty cool, right?
I'm getting this shit down, baby.
I'm so proud of you.
I'm ready to either write a book or be an actor.
Oh, my goodness.
Because then now I know where my facial expressions have come into play.
Sad. Happy. Scared.
Where are we at, director? 37%? Oh, I got 37%. Hold on. Dog tip for life. You got those on just in time, baby.
I put my headphones on so that Sean wouldn't hurt my ears so much.
Right at the end,
and I failed.
Yeah.
I failed. But speaking of failure, Mr. Murphy, our daughter's dog.
Yeah.
Kidding. He was a street doggy, right?
He is our daughter's dog. There's no kidding about that.
All right, so he's not a failure.
No, he's not a failure.
So he was a street doggy, right? And then he was like a doggy that was adopted and got put in a crate all day because they worked all day in D.C., right? And then they were like, oh, we can't take him anymore. We're allergic to him. And so then, and he also at some point broke his foot. We're not sure how, right?
Yeah.
And then he went to Emmy, and then, well, he got adopted by Emmy out of, like, the shelter place, right?
And now, like many inner-city children, he lives with his grandparents.
Yeah, anyways. But the point is that, like, the pinch point in Mr. Murphy's life might not have come at the 37%, and then at another place, like, at the 87%, or at any of those prescribed moments. And, like, when he had to figure out what he was dealing with, he could have been a puppy, and it could have been really early on. It could have been at the middle point of his life when he got stuck in the kennel all day. Or it could have been when the poor thing came to Maine, right? Like, all these antagonistic forces.
Oh, I think that was his defining moment when he came to Maine.
But I'm just saying that, like,
I'm finally out of the city. Go ahead.
My point is that Mr. Murphy says that in books and in lives, your pinch points and your defining moments might not come at the 37 or the 80% or the 50% marks. And that's okay.
Oh, definitely.
Because our lives are not perfect three-act structures.
That's for sure.
And we don't need to live like them. I hear a lot of people who are like, I can't be an author or artist or entrepreneur because I'm 50. My life's over.
Oh, that's silly.
And, yeah, or people who are 30 were like, I'll never get married.
And they darn sure don't have to follow typical blood structures.
Exactly. You get to be.
I mean, how many, some of the most famous books in the world are just the exact opposite.
Right.
Really.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
They're, what would you call them? They're like free ballers.
Free ballers.
they do whatever
they go on commando in their lives and they're free balling. And then Carrie made it explicit. But the point is, like, don't feel confined by when you're supposed to do what you think it is, you know? Like,
yeah, that's for sure.
Yeah, move beyond, man.
I mean, we're both on our 37th career, so.
This year.
Yeah, this year. All right, baby, give us a shout out.
Hey, the music we've clipped and shortened in this podcast is awesome and is made available through the Creative Commons license. Who's that artist and what's that song?
I don't know, man.
You do, you know?
I do. We've been saying it. It's Summer Spleef by Broke for Free.
And we have extra content all about living happy on the livinghappy.substack.com blog, and it's pretty awesome. And we also have a writing tips podcast called Write Better Now.
They're both awesome.
But our brand new
amazing creepy podcast is Dude No. It's like that. You gotta say it like that.
He does say it like that. It's true crime with an occasional foray into the paranormal and the macabre, and it's awesome. And finally, we have a podcast,
Loving the Strange,
which we stream live
on Carrie's Facebook and Twitter and YouTube on Fridays, but every other Friday.
Every other Friday now, because we're lazy.
So be sure to check her Facebook and Twitter for the dates when we are going to be podcasting live and making fools of ourselves.
Live.
We're going to do a Hot Wings challenge real soon.
Oh, dear God.
And that's always a good one.
Anyways, all my Twitter handles and Facebook handles and blah, blah, blah. It's either Carrie Jones Books or Carrie Jones Book. Carrie with a C-A-R-R-I-E. Yeah. Thanks for hanging out with us.
Yeah, thank you so much. Don't forget to like, subscribe, and share.
And be kind. Be kind to us old people.
Oh, yeah.